This is the Top Agents Playbook Podcast, episode 28.
Welcome to the Top Agents Playbook Podcast, your source for the very best tools, tips, and ideas used by real estate's top performers. Now here's your host, Ray Wood.
Well, hi everyone, and welcome back to the show. I'm in Sydney after a long flight from Toronto, and it's great to be back in Australia for Recharge this week on the Gold Coast, before I head to Melbourne to catch up with friends and family who I haven't seen for quite some time. A quick thank you to Locked On for sponsoring the show, and if you'd like to experience real estate's fastest growing software, I have a free trial and special deal for you. All you need to do is go to topagentsplaybook.com and hit the resources tab to access the link and discount for life promo code. You'll find Locked On intuitive, easy to use, and best of all, fun as you build your personal brand and your contact numbers when you communicate with great looking email and newsletter templates. Now, let's get into our interview. When we were planning our speaker lineup for Recharge, we wanted to feature a younger woman because we felt that element had been missing from past events. And with so many young women getting into real estate, we thought it was important to have someone like that to share their story. When I asked my business partner, Luke Newton, if he could think of anyone, he immediately suggested Nyree Ewings. My observation is that so many young women come into real estate, then so many struggle. Nyree started as office receptionist at the age of 17 and started to learn more about life as a real estate professional by studying the success of others and grabbing opportunities as they came up. I think Nyree's exciting story is inspirational, not just for young women, but anyone starting out. I like the way she identifies the character traits, attitude, and personal disciplines that have helped her become a top earner and a top agent in her market. And just before I play my interview with Nyree, I'd like to apologize for the background noise you'll hear. When I think of a good question while my guest is speaking, I write it down. Neither Nyree nor I were typing during this interview, so I have no idea where the keyboard sound effects are coming from. Well, I'm with Nyree Ewings from LJ Hooker in Cleveland, Queensland. Hi, Nyree. How are you doing?
Really great, Ray. Thank you.
I'd like to say welcome to the Top Agents Playbook and thank you so much for your time. Can we make a start? You've had a pretty spectacular 12 months. Can you tell us what you've done in terms of listings, sales and commission earned just to set it up?
Yeah, absolutely. It has been a really good 12 months. In terms of the start for 2015, I'm at 44 properties sold in the first 6 months.
Right.
In terms of GCI, I cracked 600,000 on a rolling 12-month period, which was the end of March for this year as well. And in previous years to that, 52 in a year and 55 in a year. So certainly well ahead of target.
Yeah, that's awesome. They're great numbers. So let's retrack. When did you start in real estate, and was it with the company you're with at the moment, and was it in Cleveland?
It has all been in Cleveland. I started when I was 17, just as a trainee receptionist. Income wasn't really good back then, I can assure you. I was 17, turning 18 in that year, and did reception for about 3 years, and that was at Ray White.
Okay. And was there something about real estate that attracted you? Was it the money or the lifestyle, or did anybody mentor you into it?
At that stage, no, not in the early stages of starting in real estate. Certainly had a mentor later on into my sales career. I think I recognised very early on, though, that it's an industry where I could make or lose the most money I'd see in my life, and at that point didn't have any prospects for university or education there.
Right, okay. Like a lot of agents, I guess, me included. What about when you were starting and you were getting going, did you do like a lot of training? I'm trying to work out, like, what was your inspiration? Who mentored you into it?
When I'd started into sales, which was now 7 years ago, I started my sales career at LJ Hooker Cleveland, and I think it's fair to say I probably didn't really know what I was doing for about the first 6 to 12 months, and was probably just chasing after my own tail. I then had a very great opportunity to work with somebody here in my office who'd been one of Brisbane's best agents and certainly very high up in our company and recognised on the REB list there as well. And yeah, it was a mutually beneficial arrangement where I was helping them, I guess, with a little bit of admin, which is was my background, and they're able to help me with the skills and the knowledge of how to really perform in sales.
Yeah, it's interesting. I know I should mention at this point as well that we're really excited to announce that you're going to be a speaker at our Recharge event on the Gold Coast this October. So really pumped about that. So anybody listening to this that wants to know, wants to dig a little deeper into Nairi's success, definitely get in and book your ticket to Recharge, because we're looking forward to Nairi sharing some of her secrets and her ideas and I guess the secret behind your success as well. So just talking about that, the average income for a real estate agent in Australia is, if I said 60,000, I think it'd probably be high. So you're completely blitzing that. Why do you think that you're achieving this kind of level of success when people kind of, older than you with so much more experience really struggle to earn even 100K a year? What do you think is the difference? What are you doing?
I think complacency is something that is there in every industry, and I think in an industry that is performance based like we are in real estate, it can be very easy, I guess, to probably hang around with all the negatives and talk about how hard it is. But I guess it's just making the best marketing you can out of the results that you have. Whether that's the use of social media or traditionally like your letterbox drops and all those things. I guess combining the traditional values and some of those traditional styles and mixing those with some of the current trends there as well, and just marketing those results, so result after result, and not being afraid to run buyers. I think that there's often a bit of a stigma attached to working with buyers, but certainly that's where you start your career, is by running buyers off the windows.
Okay, and I notice a lot of the things that you do on social media, Facebook in particular, and you've become very effective at marketing your own brand within the Hooker brand, I guess, which is the office that you work with. Are you getting any pushback from that?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, no, I mean, even last night, one of the photos that you liked online, which was of a block of land in Birkdale.
Yep.
Not often do I write up the actual sale result, and I thought I'd just sort of change that a little bit yesterday. I then had a text message within 2 hours from somebody that I didn't know, somebody who's not on my Facebook, and that's a personal page too. It's actually not a business page.
Yeah.
Just sort of, meshing the two together very, very well, and they asked me to appraise a splitter block that they've got here in the local area as well.
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it?
Interesting, getting buyers, getting plenty of opportunities, through the results.
And how long have you been doing this with Facebook? Has it been something ongoing?
It's been a couple of years. I was just sort of, having probably a little bit of fun with it just at the start. So 3 or 4 years ago, maybe 4 years ago is maybe when I sort of first started posting, a sold sign here or there. It wasn't just about me in front of the sold sign, but it's certainly about the property, and putting the result out there. I mean, I guess in terms of the access to information that exists out there at the moment, realestate.com and RP Data are trying to get these results as soon as they can. But I think the agent should have a shot at it first.
Nairi, what would you say to the 18, 20-year-old receptionist, like in the position that, rewind the clock, back when you started? Because this really interests me, because I think the first year or two in real estate are really, really challenging for anybody, and I think our industry loses a lot of good people in that time. What would be your advice to somebody in that position back when you started?
I guess if they really have long-term goals of wanting to make a career out of being in real estate, and not just identifying that they're just sort of turning up and just wanting to be a receptionist, And I think that that comes from your leaders as well, in your business and your principals, you know, in terms of, you know, having those conversations and making a career path available for them as well. Because I guess salespeople have often been known in real estate as being, you know, terrible with their paperwork and their administration. Yeah. You know, so that transition, you know, from, I guess, the black and white sort of mentality of reception administration can really actually transition properly into sales with really good knowledge. I guess you just you know, continue talking about how hard the work is, but how worthwhile it is, and how much, you know, freedom and flexibility it can create in your life.
You've carved out an amazing career with a pretty good organisation, obviously, who has some dominant market share in the area. I mean, it's a fabulous office. Do you get any resistance from the office with the personal marketing that you're doing? Are there any guidelines to that, or is it just each to their own?
You know, certainly working under a franchise like LJ Hookers, they do have guidelines of what they'd like us to adhere to, you know, and certainly the office would like to ensure that I'm publishing their phone number around the area as well.
Right.
You know, I'm not just building Nairi brand because I'm not sort of, you know, sort of running you know, I guess a sub business, but, you know, certainly I want to be, you know, recognised for the hard work and get the repeat business from it as well. So, you know, there are some guidelines to it.
Fair enough. Okay. Nairi, what motivates you? What gets you fired up? What gets you going?
I think probably the obligation and the expectations there of your clients. You know, you're obviously meeting so many people on a weekly basis, and, you know, I know it's obviously probably been said a thousand times before, but even when you're going out to the local newsagent or you're heading down the road to the coffee shop, you know, and just smiling and being pleasant, those sort of things continue to motivate me. You know, being courteous in an environment that just has lost its customer service and its courtesy as well. What motivates me? I think just getting bigger and better numbers and providing better service and better results for people and changing their opinion slowly one by one as, you know, real estate agents haven't had the best reputation over the years.
Yeah, that's interesting because you've only recently set up a CRM, some real estate software to work with, because I know that, am I right in saying 12 months ago you had no CRM and no assistant?
I only just employed an assistant about 7 weeks ago and just started CRM now. So I've had a system before, but I writing those kind of numbers, I just didn't have the opportunity, or I didn't focus hard enough on having that CRM. So it's something that I know can add an enormous you know, benefit to my business by, I guess, harnessing those relationships of clients that I already have.
Did you feel like you were missing opportunities because you were, like, where were you keeping your contacts before your CRM?
Mostly in my head and in my phone as well, in my iPhone. But, yeah, no, definitely. I do think I was missing opportunities, yes.
Okay, that's interesting. So tell us about hiring an assistant. What was that a challenge for you? Because I know it's very difficult for a lot of people to – Like the idea of an assistant is great, but the actual process of hiring somebody and getting everything set up and letting go is difficult. Can you walk us through that process?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I'd acknowledge for probably over 2 years that I did need a little bit of help, I guess, so it could free me up with, you know, sort of, you know, meeting more clients face-to-face and more of those dollar productive activities that we discuss.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I'd fallen in love with the idea of having an assistant, but, you know, when it came down to actually letting go or even, you know, starting that interview process, it was virtually paralyzing, you know, to think that I'd have to sort of, you know, trust somebody else 100%, you know, to do the job, you know, and to perform and, I guess, love it at the same time because, you know, I want them to feel that they've got a long-term career path here, not just a job as well.
And I think you said 7 weeks, is that right? So it's all kind of new?
Yeah, Leanne, 7 weeks in now.
Okay. So you guys are still in the honeymoon period, are you?
Yeah, definitely. She brings a wealth of experience and knowledge with her, though, as having previously worked with an international company.
Right.
And she was executive assistant to a managing director there, so she's very much used to a high-pressure environment, you know, and I think that, if anything, she's probably overqualified for the job. But
Oh, it sounds like a perfect match because you certainly did you feel like Did you feel you were spinning your wheels, like you'd got to a certain level, and that was one of the things holding you back because you weren't able to focus on those dollar productive activities?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it you do sort of max out. You get to a capacity where, you know, I mean, obviously you sort of wonder how much more you can handle when you're already sort of pulling, you know, 12 to 14 hour days, you know, six days a week, and then working on a Sunday as well. You know, it obviously doesn't create a work-life balance. So, yeah, I mean, you do max out, you know, carrying a stock of around sort of, you know, 20 listings at a time, which, you know, are all in different stages and phases, and then obviously having to convert them, you know, into sales as well.
Yeah, so you're constantly carrying 20, give or take?
Yeah, give or take, yeah, yep. So usually, yeah, 15 to 20 is where I'm sort of carrying at the moment.
Okay, tell me about, Nari, tell me about prospecting. How do you... Can I ask you how you do your prospecting? What do you do? When do you do it?
Yeah, absolutely. I guess a part of having my assistant on board will be having more of a structured approach to my prospecting. My prospecting is basically just off the back of my results, so off the listings and off the sales. Cleveland is quite a mature demographic in this area, so they're very responsive to things like letterbox drops and, you know, again, the good old-fashioned side of real estate, of where it came from. So I'm absolutely consistent in putting out the letterbox drops. I know that that there are definitely areas of my business I can improve in with regards to, you know, more contact points over those things as well.
Yeah.
And then, of course, using, you know, social media and those things as well.
So with your letterbox drops, what kind of, can I ask what kind of material you're dropping and how often you do it?
Yeah, of course. So, you know, just listeds, just solds, you know, it's I guess it's nothing spectacular, but it's keeping it routine. And I think that that's the biggest challenge for salespeople is, I guess, not losing the momentum or the drive when they're not seeing, you know, an instant result out of every single thing they're doing. You know, but to when you sort of bump into somebody in a local social club or something like that, and they've said, oh, you know, I get things from you all the time in the letterbox.
Yeah.
You know, when that person's not in real estate mode, you know, it does keep you forefront on their mind as well.
Nari, can you tell me about a typical day?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not as structured as other agents are, you know, with their 15-minute time slots to sort of record everywhere they're going. I guess I don't typically have, you know, only doing, you know, prospecting, you know, for a two-hour period in the morning and then, you know, sort of only doing appointments thereafter.
Yes.
So, you know, a typical day looks like, you know, checking your emails at 3 or 4 in the morning.
Right.
It's just one of those obsessive things that you do. And, of course, you're sort of checking them when you get back up early in the later in the morning as well, you know, getting into the office and dealing with all of the immediate things and all of the hard calls first up in the morning. I think is one really valuable tool that I was taught very early on. It certainly makes way for a much easier day as you go through.
Yeah. Okay. So if you've got, for example, if you've got a seller that needs to have a price reduction, or you need to make a time with that seller, or there's some issues, are they the hard calls you're talking about?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, having those hard calls about whether they're, you know, having a meeting, you know, setting up for, you know, a price adjustment if it's required.
Yeah.
You know, or dealing with, you know, some of the disappointment sometimes that there's not as much interest in a property, you know, as we had thought there would be.
How do you recover from a challenge like a sale falls over, which happens invariably, or fails the physical from a building in pest or something like that?
I guess in terms of the building and pest and certainly the finance clause as well, my offer process with the buyers and my discussions with the contracts are really quite – they're lengthy, but they're controlled at the same time. So I'm explaining then and there while we're actually making that offer, you know, what I think, you know, or what we, you know, deem will be reasonable, because I guess Queensland law is a little bit ambiguous in the way it's written.
Right.
And I guess I just make the buyer feel that they're supported through this process as well, and I let them know that I want them there on the day so that they can hear everything firsthand. I let them know that I'm going to be there to support them as well. Obviously, I'm there to represent the owner and open the property and provide access. But, you know, then following up the next day and saying to them, everything went well yesterday. Are you happy moving forward? And not asking if there's actual problems. Do you have any issues from the building and pest? I think it's all about, you know, feeling supported, but it's also about your delivery and the impact that that can have on the buyer too.
Okay. So you kind of set your buyer up for some potential issues if you're worried about the property?
Yeah, being very transparent right from the get-go. If I'm aware of something in the property, I'll actually point it out, so it's not a big deal later on when, you know, it doesn't feel like a bombshell. You know, if I'm aware that there's been previous termite damage and it was, you know, 15 or 20 years ago, I'll absolutely let them know. Let them know that, you know, of course, if the seller told me everything was repaired or not repaired as well. So I think just creating more of a transparent process, you know, from very much the start to the finish for them, so that they feel that there hasn't, you know, not just been bombshells, but there hasn't been any, I guess, mistruths through that process as
okay.
well.
Okay. Back on the prospecting, and I guess the step beyond prospecting, your pre-listing, do you use a pre-listing kit?
I have in the past, and now that I have a PA, we'll be doing that a little bit more regularly.
Okay. Okay. And what does that include? What are you thinking?
I guess I'm probably just sort of running with some of the generic stuff at the moment. LJ Hookers have an email pre-listing kit that we're able to send before we get there as well.
Oh, okay, cool.
Although I still feel like sometimes the physical delivery of the booklet shows the client of your preparedness, your interest as well.
Yes.
And I think you're more likely then via an email to actually get some information written down on that pre-list kit. So, you know, an introduction to myself, an introduction to the office here as well, and some of those, results that are there for both of us, both the team and both myself individually too.
Okay.
You know, and then obviously asking some questions, you know, regarding, you know, sort of why they're selling and what they're wanting to achieve.
Okay. What about your actual listing presentation? Can you walk me through that? Because I know before we pressed record, you told me right at the start that you felt you had the approach wrong back when you started. So can you tell me how that works?
Yeah, sure, of course. So my listing presentation that I'm actually taking out with me is more than just a CMA, because I feel that every agent just shows up with a CMA now. You know, everything that's automatically generated out of here, and, you know, if we're all showing up with the same information, you know, and all trying to position ourselves as experts, then, you know, unless you can actually demonstrate something different and provide something different, then, you know, I guess we're only going to be, you know, compared on value or compared on price, should I say, on commission price and structure.
Right.
So my listing presentation has a huge big photo of myself on the front, obviously a professional shot. Inside that, you know, depending on sort of, you know, where I'm going will depend on the testimonials that I include. If I know I'm going to see somebody who's a little bit more mature, then of course I'm going to include, you know, a testimonial from somebody that was more mature when they sold. And if it was, you know, a higher priced property, then I'm going to include one that's a little bit higher priced as well. Or if it's somebody who's been there for 40 years in the one home, then I know that I'll tailor that as well. It's got several years of my calendar sales in there as well, so that I could explain, you know, I guess what happened, you know, for the GFC in my area and how we were affected and the percentages, you know, that I guess were changed as well. So, again, not just relying on a graph out of RP data, but actually explaining it over those years of results. And you can actually see those sorts of trends, you know, exactly through my results too. And then letting them know when the market started to, you know, show signs of recovery as well, and how those transactions are, you know, increasing.
Right. And what about the actual presentation itself, when you're speaking with your potential sellers, do you have them do a questionnaire in advance, or do you just wing it, play it by ear, see how it goes?
At this point, playing it by ear, it depends on who I'm meeting and understanding, obviously, the difference between an appraisal and a listing presentation. And I think often we don't know what that is until we actually get there and meet the person as well, because they're you know, obviously in decision-making process, and sometimes they're not 100% sure whether they're selling or not selling. They might only just be, you know, sort of having an idea thrown around and reassessing again at some point in the future. So, you know, always going for a look around the place first, you know, so I can actually see, you know, of the features. And obviously the benefits of the position that's there. I mean, every home has positives, you know, no matter where it is, even if it's a little sort of retirement village, which is 32 metres, you know, or whether it's, you know, a much grander scale home as well.
Nairi, this is awesome, and I want to thank you. I'm going to wind up, because I've just done this little teaser really for Recharge. There's a heap more information that you've got, and I'm really looking forward to catching up on the Gold Coast. And I know so many of people that subscribe to agents that subscribe to this podcast are interested and looking forward to seeing you as well. So I want to say thank you before I let you go. My final question, and I like to ask everybody this on the podcast, who inspires you?
it's probably my mentor played a huge role, and I guess creating some of that as well. But, you know, in terms of inspiration, I mean, there's obviously a number of, you know, enormous figures that are out there, you know, probably, you know, sort of celebrity like, you know, figures that're not always connected with the real estate world.
Yeah.
Probably the motivators, you know, the ones that just keep going, even though they've had some failures as well.
Yeah.
You know, and then of course you have a few more that are, you know, more close to home as well. You know,
yeah.
People that you see, you know, overcome, you know, heartache and challenges and things like that, and they just keep going too, and they don't have to be in this industry or earning an enormous income.
Yeah. Well, look, I want to say congratulations. You are a rising star. Your numbers are amazing, and I know they've been lifting over the last few years. I'm looking forward to seeing even more exciting results in the future. So, Nari, thank you so much for your time, and I look forward to seeing you in October.
Wonderful. Thank you, Ray. Really appreciate it and excited about October too.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Hi, everybody. I'm Stephen Bradbury, Australia's first Winter Olympic gold medalist. Very much looking forward to motivating and entertaining everybody at Real Estate Recharge on the Gold Coast this October. Hope to see you there.
You've been listening to the Top Agents Playbook podcast. For show notes from this episode, recent podcasts and lots more, go to topagentsplaybook.com.